July 20, in the year 356 BC, was a great day for Philip, and it marked a high point in his life so far. An intelligent and charismatic young man in his mid-20s, he had been king of Macedonia for the past 2 years. This was no sinecure, for he was surrounded by enemies. On the day in question, he was with his army on campaign. Three messengers arrived, one after another, at his camp, each bearing wonderful news. The first rider brought a report from his trusty and talented general, Parmenion, who had scored a victory against Macedonia's hereditary foes, the fierce, wild Illyrians. Then came a dispatch from southern Greece, where the Olympic Games were being held. Philip had entered a horse in one of the equestrian events. Only the very wealthy could afford the training and upkeep of 2 or 4 horse chariots, but financing a competitor in a 4.5-mile horse race was costly enough. Philip's investment had paid off, for his mount came in first. The publicity would give a shine to his embattled reputation. But the last messenger came from Pella, his capital city. His wife, Olympias, had given birth to a healthy boy. The official seers, or soothsayers, said that the arrival of a son, timed to coincide with these other successes, augured well. When he grew up, he would surely be invincible. For his father, there was the prospect of continuing the dynasty. The infant's name was to be Alexander. The baby crown prince faced the prospect of a daunting inheritance. He soon came to understand the realities of life and death as a member of the royal family. Being a clever and observant child, he remembered what he saw, and early lessons set the pattern of his adult attitudes. Here are some of the things he must have learned. The rocky and vertiginous geography of Macedon was hostile to good governance. The kingdom lay to the north of Mount Olympus, traditional home of Zeus and the other anthropomorphic divinities of the Hellenic pantheon. Its center was a fertile alluvial plain bordered by the wooded mountains of northern Macedonia. Its coastline was interrupted by the three-fingered peninsula of Chalcidice, which was peppered with Greek trading settlements. Macedonia was inhabited by unruly tribes, which devoted their time and energy to stock raising and hunting. They regularly moved sheep to and from grazing grounds, the lowlands in winter and the highlands in summer. They paid as little attention as possible to central authority. There was a myriad of villages and very few settled urban communities. The kingdom had one important raw material in almost limitless amounts: high-quality timber. Trade increased around the Aegean Sea, for travel or transport by sea was easier by far than to go by land. There was growing demand for merchant ships and war galleys, and it followed for planking and oars. The tall trees of Macedonia were ideal for the purpose, unlike the stunted products of the Greek landscape. Pitch was also exported for caulking boats. Life, even for despots, was basic. The father of history, Herodotus, who flourished in the 5th century BC, writes of the primitive Macedonian monarchy. His contemporaries would have recognized the simplicity of the royal lifestyle, which had changed little over the centuries. The king lived in a farmhouse with a smoke hole in the roof, and the queen did the cooking. Herodotus, who probably visited Macedonia, commented, "In the old days, ruling houses were poor, just like ordinary people." Up to Philip's day and beyond, the monarch adopted an informal way of life. At home, he hunted and drank with his masculine companions, or hetairoi. In the field, he fought at the head of his army, and was surrounded by a select bodyguard of 7 noblemen, the somatophylaxes. His magnificent armor inevitably attracted enemy attacks. He mingled easily with his subjects and eschewed titles, being addressed only by his given name or king. He had to put up with impertinence from the rank and file, just as Agamemnon, commander-in-chief at Troy, was obliged to hear out Homer's Thersites, a bow-legged and lame troublemaker whose head was filled with a store of disorderly words. In effect, a king like Philip was not an autocrat, but a tribal leader, and his success or failure would largely depend on his performance in war and his magnanimity in peace. It was important that he be generous with personal favors, together with gifts of estates, money, and loot on campaign.